everybody understands English, no?
Yes,
no. See, is that Varna is technically in here is connected with ashram. They're saying ashram is your spiritual setting. So when you're talking, see, when you talk Brahman, then that's brahmachari, right? So, but when you say kshatriya, then you're meaning grihastha, right? Because a kshatriya is a brahmachari, a vaishya is a brahmachari, still follow the same lifestyle, right? So then, if someone's occupation is that of administration, then they wouldn't necessarily, they wouldn't use preaching as their occupation. Does that make sense? Right? It would just like, he's saying, you do this activity as, you know, you're doing, a king who's doing administration doesn't preach. But you could also say a king who does administration doesn't do business. You understand? Because you can't do both as an occupation. In other words, if he was trying to maintain himself as a preacher and be known as a preacher and still be the administrator, it wouldn't work so good. Does that make sense? Because he has to manage the whole country, he has to do all those things. It's not that he may not give advice according to Shastra and things like that, but his occupation is not preaching. Does that make sense? So it doesn't mean that he doesn't discuss Shastra. It's like how many of these conversations or, you know, literatures are coming from the court of Janaka Rishi, right? Discussions between Janaka, or like you see in the Bhagavatam, there's the king and some sage discussing. But it's not their occupation. You know what I'm saying? Just like you have someone there in the city, then they have, let's say they're a business person. So they're a business person from the morning to the evening, right? So during that time that they are also trying to be the preacher, would their business work? No. They're preaching outside of that. So that means it's not a preaching, it's a sadhana. You understand? So for the Brahmin, then their sadhana is their occupation. For Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, then their sadhana and occupation are separate. Does that make sense? Right. Yeah. So now let us say he does preach. Okay? From preaching, then people will give him a dakshin. Right? What if they don't give a suitable dakshin? Then he is the king. What is he supposed to do? He's supposed to establish dharma. He's supposed to, when people don't give proper dakshins to Brahmins, then assure that they are. So now what does he do? Because if he tells them you have to give a dakshin, then where does, the point is you listen to someone because of the brahminical nature. So therefore, they're tolerant, they're humble, they're this, that. In other words, the Brahmin doesn't get a proper dakshin, he walks off, he gets the benefit anyway. The person that didn't give the dakshin, they're the ones that have problems. Does that make sense? But the Brahmin can do that, because the Kshatriya, it's his business to establish what is the proper, you know, standards. Does that make sense? So you wouldn't be able to mix them. That's why somebody does administration, someone does business, and someone does preaching. Right? But brahmacharis who are managing doesn't mean that they don't preach when they can. It's just that their main thing is to make sure the preaching is going on. So by their preaching, the preaching doesn't go on, what's the use? You know what I'm saying? If by them giving the class and all the organization of all the other preaching programs falls apart, then his preaching was not actually that beneficial. You know what I'm saying? But he's organized everything so it goes nicely. Then on top of that, he preaches, that's fine. Right? Does that make sense? So it happens outside of your service. Does that make sense? So it's the same. Basically, it has a reflection of that, what Bhishma is talking about. It's not exact as the Brahmacharis. Right? Does that make sense? So like that, you have to find the balance. Like, just like you'll see is, students will be able to preach nicely, Brahmacharis will be able to preach nicely, your kind of like elder or senior Grihasthas will be able to preach nicely. Your Grihasthas in between, the new Grihasthas, they don't have time. Right? Because they have to take care of family, the young children, making their money, establishing everything. It doesn't work so well. You know what I'm saying? So one has to be careful of how one mixes. Everybody's preaching, everybody's supporting in some way, but who can make an occupation out of it, that's another thing. Does that make sense? Is that all right? What was the other point? Oh, you don't accept charity because if you're virile, you produce, you don't accept. You know, so there's strength, it doesn't go. Vaishyas don't accept, they would. They do their business, and they accept charity too. They'll do anything to get money. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So, it's just not allowed. Because they're supposed to make money and give it away. Right? Kshatriyas take tax, they get their money by protecting people. They're not getting money, it means they're not protecting anybody. Right? So why should they accept charity? Brahmins, they don't do anything that generates money. Right? They preach, they do the puja, they do yajnas, they study shastra, they teach. It's only because shastra says, then people give them money. If it didn't say that, no one would give the Brahmins money. I mean, as you look in your modern society, your teachers get the least paid of anybody, though they happen to be the academically the most qualified. Right? Because no one values knowledge. It's something else. You know, you look nice, you can dance nice, you can sing, hey, you make money. Right?
Means, in case, then things you know slow, because the person is managing both things, like in case of Brahmachari, managing and preaching, because he has to do that also. So things you know into slowly. As if the Prabhupada wants us to say, management should be done by Grihasthas and preaching should be done by Brahmacharis. So when things should be, we can say, very efficient and wonderful, and things can move fast also. But in this case, when present setup doesn't allow us this, then things will move a little slow. But we have to just do the needful.
Yeah. Means that if somebody has to do both and they are the preacher, then they, you know, keep it more simple. Don't do something elaborate. You know what I'm saying is, in other words, the idea that the temple is what's going to attract everybody. No. Life attracts people. There's plenty of temples around India and nobody's coming to them. You know what I'm saying? So it's not the building, it's what happens in the building. So therefore, if one has to do both, then one focuses on the preaching and organizes things in a simple way so it goes on nicely. Then the atmosphere is nice, people are enlivened. Right? And then slowly, slowly, as people become trained, then you can get them to manage. Right? You know, or if you by nature are a manager, not so comfortable with the preaching, then you manage things nicely so that everything's organized and in the most efficient way train people to make them into the preachers, and so you can manage, you know, whatever works. Is that okay?
One of the qualities of Brahmana is simplicity. And at the same time, we find the Chanakya very diplomatic and able to understand the subtleties of politics and give advice to Chandragupta. And I also heard that in the very times the Brahmanas were the advisors to separate kings. So they will also have to know politics and the complex situations. How can they maintain the simplicity?
Okay. Here's basically this is a very, it's an important point because this is where we take the difference between simple, meaning that it is uncomplicated, and simple meaning unsophisticated. Right? So when we say simple, we don't mean simple tongue. You understand?
Sometimes a fool.
Yeah. Okay. You know computers?
Yeah.
Okay. So you have a PC platform, Windows platform, right? And you have a Unix platform. Right? What's the difference? Unix is simple because it just gets the performance done in the most direct way possible. While the PC is still trying to look like a Mac. You understand? So it's complicated. Does that make sense? Therefore, Unix doesn't crash, PCs do. Right? You understand? Simple means that it's done in the most straightforward way possible, but it's not burdened by the concept of being pragmatic. You know what I'm saying? Like an open drain, that's simple. A closed drain with a manhole cover, that's complex. Right? Because the simple one is just there. It's a drain. It's obvious a drain. You can see it's a drain. And you just take a broom and sweep it and it's clean. Right? But the closed drain then means that something happens. You can't see it, so it looks very sophisticated. But it's very complicated. Right? Now, the modern open drain would look very industrial, right? So therefore, that's why simple means that it doesn't cost anything. But if you go and look at these old temples and cities, they have all the open drains, but even their drains look nice. Right? So simple doesn't mean it's not sophisticated. Right? Dhoti, it's a piece of cloth, but it's simple, though it's more sophisticated and more difficult to put on than a pair of pants. But the pants, those are complicated. Because you can't just go out and buy, let's say you want to buy a roll of pants, you know? And as you need them, you just cut them off. I'll take 5 meters of pants, you know? But it doesn't work like that. So the pants, you need a tailor, a special way to take care, you know what I'm saying? Like that. So that's complex. Does that make sense? A dhoti is simple. Does that make sense? So something that's just the most natural, straightforward way of doing things, uncomplicated. But let's say another way you can look at it is least dependent. Right? The open drain, you clean it yourself. The dhoti, you make it yourself, put it on yourself, dye it yourself. Pair of pants, you need a tailor. You have to get someone to dye it for you. You know, unless you want separate pants, but you know what I'm saying? Like that. You have to take. Does that make sense? So you're dependent upon others. You're dependent upon the sweeper to come and fix your open drain. You know, then all the big Brahmins stand around looking, and then you know he's there trying to fix it. But you're dependent upon him. Well, the drain, you just sweep it out yourself. You know what I'm saying? You know, it is clean. You can wash it. It's clean. The clothes drain is never clean. You know, because unless you get inside and scrub it, who can do that? So it's never actually clean. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is simple is what is straightforward, what's sophisticated. Like that. It can also be very simple, meaning the simple person who's not very refined can also operate it. You know what I'm saying? But also the sophisticated person can operate it. Does that make sense? But it doesn't have to not look nice. Right? Like a column. Okay, which is more simple, a column with an arch or a big open space with beams? The big open space with beams is. But then you have to engineer those beams, so many iron rods, everything like that. Does that make sense? Right? Means this, you're dependent on bricks.
Only bricks, no rod.
That's another thing. What I'm saying is, you're dependent upon bricks. The other thing, you're dependent upon iron rods, and, you know, it's the cement and rods that hold it up, not the bricks. So that means that's more complex. Here is, they take some mud, they, you know, some lady pushes it into this mold, it dries in the sun, then the lady carries it on her head and puts it in the kiln. They, you know, burn some wood or coal, they fire them, then they put them in your truck, drop them off at your place. And then the guys take, you know, whatever you want to put it together with, and then put up the building. Does that make sense? So that's simple. But the other one is then you need iron rods, lots of cement, you need the cement mixing machines, you need so many different things. Does that make sense? So it's more complex. It's not as simple. That's why is you can have something like at the temple, then they have those sandstone columns, right? But they're not just plain, they're nicely carved. So just because they're carved doesn't make them complicated. It's still simple. It's just a piece of stone that's made to look nice, and it holds up the roof. You understand? Does that make sense? The altar, it's just a piece of wood. It's been carved. Simple. Does that make sense? Like that. So that's the difference. So simple does, so does that make sense? Simple is just what's the most straightforward, most natural, but you know, but in, at least in this case, then just, yeah, what's straightforward. Does that make sense?
So how one gets the vision to, Brahmanas, they have that vision to see this, because
the Brahmanas have that vision.
They give the advice that what is the simple way.
Yeah, no, Brahmanas have the advice.
Kshatriyas
will have. I mean, it depends on the quality of the Kshatriya. Kshatriya is goodness and passion. No? So that means goodness means they studied the Shastras. See, it's like this. Everything that you do, everything you study in the Gurukul, and all the lifestyle you live, when a Brahman leaves the Gurukul, does his occupation change from that of the Brahmachari? Does it or not? No, it's exactly the same. Right? Kshatriya, basically it's the same, though you have to add into it the art of administration. Right? Vaishya is the character gained in the school that he does business with. But they didn't teach him to do business in the Gurukul. Right? But, you know, he learned to be responsible, he learned to be sense-controlled, he learned to be focused, he learned to be active. All the things he needs to do well in business. But the form of it looks very different. You know? Does that make sense? So, Brahmas, Kshatriyas, they know. And also just, it's there because they grew up in the Gurukul, the Vaishyas, therefore then, they grew up in a simple lifestyle, then they just make it a little fancier, and then, you know, as a grihastha. But they keep it simple. You know, you have a big open veranda, right? You can use it for anything. You can eat there, you can sleep there, you can play games there, you can rest there, you can have guests there, the kids can play there, you can put, you know, store things there, you can do anything with it, right? So that's, it's simple. Does that make sense? That's why you see the old houses. They had so many verandas and all these different things, because you can do anything with it. And nowadays, it's, oh, that just takes up space. Yeah, it does, but it takes up space that you can use in any way. And now you put in a
auditorium.
Yeah.
Auditorium, the chairs.
Yeah, and then what can you do with it? Nothing. You can do one thing with it. Yeah. Does that make sense? You know, just like you have a mattress on the floor with nice round, with the big pillows and all things like that. You can do anything with that. But if you have a sofa, you only have, there's not much you can do with it. You understand? Plus the mattress, you can even just pick it up and move it. Well, the sofa, what do you do with it? You understand? So So that's the difference. You know? So like that is. I said most of us. Okay, I thought you said post office. Okay, most of us joined late.
So what is that? Is what we are lacking in as compared to the Bruce Lee boys and how we can go
on? What is one lacking by joining late that's different from what Gurukul boys have joined early?
As far as preaching goes.
As far as preaching goes. Depends upon your lifestyle before you join. But, yeah. Yeah, it depends on your lifestyle before you join. The one thing is independence. That would probably be the major thing. Because if you grow up in the Gurukul, you learn you're self-sufficient. You're not dependent upon women. So if you're not dependent upon women, you're not going to be dependent upon anyone else. Right? Does that make sense? That will be the main difference. Like that. Besides that, then, the knowledge that you would be gaining in sadhana, you would be gaining now, the habits, they'll have them, they'll have gained those at an earlier age, so they can start doing things earlier, naturally. You know? But as far as, yeah, it just makes it easier like that. But as far as, you know, perfecting one's spiritual life, going back to Godhead, then there's no difference. Anyone can start at any time and become perfect. Right? Maharaj Katpanga needed a moment to, like that. So that's not, that itself is not a problem. Does that make sense? That's not a problem. But they have the advantage of that the Krishna conscious lifestyle is their lifestyle, because that's where they've grown up. And then while someone grows up joins later, then they have whatever the lifestyle was that then they try to Krishnaize. So if it was more pious, then it's easier. If it's less pious, it's less. It's more difficult. Right? So it's just a matter of they follow the lifestyle that's directly Krishna conscious. Grown on a pious background, then you're conditioned by the mode of goodness. You know what I'm saying? It's just like when the, you know, when your yatra is not Krishna conscious, they're Hindus. You understand? Like that. And then from there they become Krishna conscious again. When Westerners aren't Krishna conscious, then their lifestyle is a bit more wild. You understand? Does that make sense? Like that. So that's the difference. So for them, then they don't necessarily have that kind of conditioning. They don't worry that you know, I got to have this kind of car, or live in this kind of area, or make this kind of money, or have this kind of job, or like that. Well, those who join later may find they think like that. You know what I'm saying? Right? Well, those who grow up in the Gurukul, it would be less like that. Or it would be more standard, you know? Stuff, you know, a nice body or, you know, things like that. It's not, you know, oh, you're driving, you know, this model of car or that model of car. You understand? Well, that's very much a reality of those who are Grihasthas in your yatra. You know what I'm saying? Devotees in your yatra would rather live in a smaller apartment and have a fancier car than live in a bigger apartment and have a smaller car. Because no one sees your apartment, because no one goes to each other's house. But they see your car. You understand? That's what I mean, that you're you know, Bombay Hindus when you're not Krishna conscious. Does that make sense? Well, the Westerners will have their idea of conditioning, what they're worried about when they're not Krishna conscious. Does that make sense? But if you grow up in the Gurukul, then you have, it's a different kind of conditioning. Like that. Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of how much you can give that up, that's all. You know, to that, and the point is because the soul is pure, so that means it's easy enough to do. It's just whether someone wants to do it or, you know what I'm saying? Easy enough meaning it can be done. But depending upon the degree of the conditioning, then one has to maintain those things. You know what I'm saying? We're saying this as a point of each individual's personal contemplation of their Krishna consciousness, right? Does that make sense? We're not saying this as a comment on the zone. Does that make sense? We're saying is that just because you live a life of the mode of goodness and you're not Krishna conscious, so therefore you don't really notice any problems, doesn't mean that it's not going to keep you in the material world any less than if it was in the mode of passion or ignorance. Right? A chain, whether it's gold, whether it's silver, whether it's iron, will keep you in the material world. It's just nicer. That's all. But the point is it's not a matter of throwing it out. Right? It's a matter of engaging Krishna service. Right? Get up in the morning, you know, like this, then you go in, see your parents, you touch their feet, you say a few things, you go off, and then, you know, you're going to leave the house, you go to your mom, say, okay, I'm going now, namaskar, then leave. But you could have done that as a devotee, or you could have done that as a Hindu. Which did you do it as? That's the question. Now, if we take that and throw that out, that would be wrong, because that's what the Shastra says you're supposed to do. But the rules of the Shastra are meant for the lifestyle of a devotee. Right? In other words, someone who follows the Shastra that's not a devotee, we call them a Hindu. Right? Hindu is somebody who follows the Vedic culture but does not necessarily have a specific defined philosophy. Right? In other words, you can be a Hindu and be a Shankarite or be a Vaishnav or be a Shakta, or you know, be an atheist, you can be anything. You know what I'm saying? As long as the culture you accept the Vedas. Does that make sense? Because you go to any Hindu's house, they will greet you, they will take care of you, they will feed you, everything will be the same. You know, the kind of food, this, that, that'll be different according to the region. But the cultural experience will be exactly the same. It doesn't matter if it's a rich house or a poor house, it'll be exactly the same. Because they all follow the same culture. But not philosophy. Does that make sense? Therefore, it's sentiment. Because without the philosophy to give it its you know, direction and all that, therefore that's why when the kids ask, the parents can't give any answers, because it's just sentiment. Does that make sense? Well, if you know the philosophy and everybody has the same philosophy but no culture, that also is the problem, because human beings need culture. Right? So that's a difficult. Does that make sense? So the point is that whatever it is, it must be engaged. You know? Do you need a seat?
No, I'm very comfortable.
Oh, you're okay.
Yes, yes.
Okay. Does that make sense? Right? Does that make sense? So the point is so that's what happens. The Westerners will throw out their culture because it generally has nothing to do with Krishna. But they don't replace it. Right? That's what's nice in your yatra, is that it has a culture. Because the culture you grow up in is basically Vedic. Just it may not have been very focused on Krishna. Right? But if in understanding that, then you say, oh, this is nonsense that I'm, you know, adhering to this and therefore I'm not being Krishna conscious, so I throw out the culture, then what would be the difference? You won't, it means, then you'll have no culture. So, but the point is to know what is the culture, what's important, what's not. Does that make sense? Okay. Okay.
In a Brahmachari ashram, like as this is a Gurukul, which are the basic principles which are focused on so that he develops the qualities as a Brahmachari, as a student. Similarly, as in Brahmachari ashram, we are there. So, what should be the basic principles should be focused? Like one shloka comes, Brahmachari Guru Kule Vasan Danto Guru, and that shloka is like giving a guideline for Brahmachari. So, what you focus here in Gurukul, and generally, that's what is the Brahmachari ashram is also like that. So, what should be the principles we should focus?
What are the principles to focus on as a Brahmachari, or for the Brahmachari ashram? First is, besides just the basic dress and all that, you know, organizing so they look like Brahmacharis, then the first thing is respect. Because if you don't have respect, then the whole culture doesn't work. The whole philosophy doesn't work. It's all based, the first thing is on respect. So that means, because it's the first principle, if you can't identify, respect means you can tell the difference between something. It's intelligence. So Pearson with no respect, they think they're very cool and very, you know, smart looking, but they're actually quite stupid. Because only someone who's not smart would be disrespectful. One, it's not a very nice way to interact. Two, you don't know what their reactions are. Right? Does that make sense? The guy looks very simple. He's simply dressed, just a kurta and a dhoti, you know, plastic buttons, and the guy insults him. He doesn't know that he's got a factory with 10,000 workers. That guy will get him. Right? He's got friends. He'll keep you out of the work market. You know, you want to flip burgers down at McDonald's? Great, we can get that. But you want to get some position? Forget it. He'll just tell his friends. So it's not smart. So because ultimately then you have God. God is the one running everything. So everything actually is coming from him. So you can't respect God's creation. How will you respect the person? Right? I have great respect for this devotee, but when I go to his house and I knock things over in his house, I slam the doors, you know, I put my feet up on his table, and you know, then it's kind of like, what's going on here? So if you can't respect God's creation, how will you actually respect God as a person? Okay, God as, he's bigger than me, and if I don't, you know, behave nicely, then he'll, you know, turn me into a little pile of ashes or something. But fear is not the motive behind the Vedic concept of respect. Right? Non-Vedic religions are based on fear. Vedic or not. Vedic is respect. Does that make sense? Right? So it's the first principle. You have to be able to respect who you are and respect who someone else is. And then only you can know what the relationship is and then behave. Then all those qualities you have can be used. But if there's no respect, it won't work. Next thing is knowledge. They must have knowledge of the Shastra. Knowledge of what's right and wrong, what's the proper behavior, what's the proper philosophy, the proper culture, and then all the particular skills or techniques that you feel are important in your environment, you know, the preaching or the, dealing with guests or deity worship or, you know, what books that you want, Bhagavad Gita or Chanakya, or, you know, anything, whatever it is that you're taking that, your knowledge. Then you'll have cleanliness. Right? Someone's not clean, how do they situate themselves in goodness? Right? God's the supreme clean, so therefore you want to be in touch with God, you have to be clean. Okay, the Paramahamsas are clean at heart, therefore they don't have to bother about the body. You know, they can wander in the forest like Sukadeva or the Python Sadhu, but something is clean. So if the heart's not clean, then we start off with making the body clean. And because we think with the body, then the mind becomes purified. Right? Clean body, clean mind. Right? And then with time, then we start to get accustomed to living in the mode of goodness. Right? And it's yeah. Does that make sense? it's also very important, even if one wants to be a grihastha, right? You're not clean, women don't function, right? Does that make sense? So one has to be very careful, because the masculine principle then in its original form is sat, eternality, right? Krishna is the basis of everything. When sat reflects in the material world, it becomes ignorance, right? That's why the boys are inclined towards being dirty. Girls never, generally. And they grew up in the street, maybe, but otherwise, then they're always clean. They like the environment clean, they like to be clean, everything's clean. Right? So you can't be a good... So if you come in already clean, that puts you in a better position than if you come in and your wife has to train you to be clean. Otherwise, who's the boss? Right? You understand? So then cleanliness, then service attitude. We have to have a proper service attitude, because everything is based on action, right? Avideya is the operation of the field, right? Vasudeva is the prominent of the deities, right? Obhasanta Shankar Jumna and Ruda. Of the Kalyana Gunas, then they each have two gunas. But Vasudeva has all six, because to perform the activity needs all the qualities. Right? To arrange the field, to be attracted to the field, to have the need for the field, then two qualities are there that function in each. But to operate the field, you need all six. Does that make sense? So action is actually the center of the Vedic culture. Somebody doing nothing is not part of the Vedic culture. There's no such thing as anybody doing nothing. Right. So action is the most important element. Action doesn't mean it has to be physical, body, mind, or words, or all, any combination. Then that works. So one has to be out of the mode of ignorance and active. Right? And what kind of action is that? Is one has, it's action that's sacrifice. Right? Because you're voluntarily giving up your own needs for someone else. So the brahmachari does that, the grihastha has to do that. No difference. Same training for a brahmachari is the exact same training for a grihastha. Does that make sense? You know, for a preacher, for a manager, for a leader, it means it only functions because of the austerity and the sacrifice. Does that make sense? That's the only way anything works. Right? Even you want to make a business work. It's your own business, but still you have to sacrifice for the business to make it work. So, therefore, service attitude is very important. Then sense control. One can only do those things if you have sense control. Right? The senses aren't in control. You won't be able to sacrifice. You won't be able to study. You won't be able to be respectful. You won't be able to be clean. You know what I'm saying? So the control of the senses is most important. Like Krishna, he's the most sense control. That's why he's in control of everything. You understand? And humility. That goes with the service, humble service, right? So you're active and you have a good service attitude and you're humble, right? So then that brings about tolerance. Is that okay? There's faith and there's sentimentalism.
Yeah. How can we distinguish that? I'm sentimentally, or I'm having really some faith.
Okay, so faith and sentimentalism. Faith means that it won't be disturbed, whatever the situation, if it doesn't go nuts. If you don't get a pious result, and you're still going to continue, that's faith. Right? Sentiment means something goes wrong and you start to have doubts. Right? I'm a devotee, I go to the temple. Well, how is it that my, you know, son got sick, or he failed his exam, or, you know, these kind of things? That's sentiment. Right? The other is you don't know the philosophy. Means by an earlier definition, then if you follow the culture but don't know the philosophy, that's sentiment. Otherwise, why would you be following the culture? Right? Why go to the temple? Oh no, it's good. It's very good. Everything will go nice if we go to the temple. It's true. But why? Because it's God. Right? You worship Krishna, everything else works. You water the root, then all the leaves and branches are. Right? Does that make sense? So that would be the easiest, clearest, most definable. Right? Because the other one, then, it may be too difficult to apply. Right? So you know the philosophy, and you know how to follow the culture. Right? In other words, faith is when you have, you know, you believe in the existence of God and a higher principle. Then the next stage is sadhusanga, so you take that up. Then bhajana kriya, then you follow the lifestyle. Right? Is that okay? So faith means where something sublime, then you believe in. Belief in something sublime. I think that's Prabhupada's gives the simple definition of faith. You know, conviction in, you know, the principle of something sublime. Is that okay?
In bhakti, generally, chanting of the holy names is the most important thing in all this world. But sometimes, after coming to the platforms and advancing Krishna consciousness, we see different different activities like austerities and chaturmas is going on also. Different different standards are given for us to follow. So in that way, how to exactly understand that out of all activities like austerities, then knowledge and all this, chanting of the holy names is the utmost. Because person sometimes gets attracted to austerities, somebody gets attracted to knowledge, somebody gets attracted to holy name. So how do you exactly understand the mission is of chanting of the holy names?
So how do you understand what is, I mean, to balance other activities that are supportive of chanting the holy name with the holy name and understand what's the most, you know, what should be prominent, what should be more important to apply. It means the chanting is the most important. So then you give example of austerities and other things come up, chaturmas, this, that. Austerity, the definition of austerity is the proper performance of one's duties. Right? So by chanting Hare Krishna, then that's the best austerity. Manu mentions that means, of course, we see out of all the persons and the Brahmins the most austere. Right? Then of those who are austere, then it's said that that Brahmin who studies and teaches the scriptures, that's the most austere. Right? And even within that, one who chants the holy name is the most austere. Right? So in other words, Manu gives the example that a Brahmin is the most extreme austerity up to the tips of his nails, though he's wearing a nice garland, but he's studying, teaching the scriptures, and he's chanting japa. You understand? So there's nothing more austere than that. So the chaturmas may have its advantage. One is that there's a basic of it that Lord Chaitanya wanted everyone to follow, so that one thing you don't eat in that one month, right? Secondly, it's just not good for you to eat in that month anyway. It makes you sick if you eat it. So therefore you avoid it, then it makes life a lot easier. But to go beyond that, then it's a matter of, is there any advantage? Prabhupada, like the sannyasis, the brahmacharis, they do those things. Then the common person considers this something very special. So then they may have respect, oh, the great sadhus, this, that. They already have that, there's no need. Really. You understand? That studying, preaching, teaching is more important. But, you know, in some environments it's not. But nowadays it's very minimal. There's a very minimal, like, hardcore, you know, Hindu community these days as far as the culture goes. Like that. It's more nationalism now than Vedic, you know, like that. So it doesn't necessarily impress them. It's not something they'll notice. You know, a big program, nice program, well-done program, and the devotees are all intelligent and well-behaved, and that will impress them more than necessarily a beard or something, you know, like that. Then, yeah, one has to just know what these meanings are. What is sacrifice? What is austerity? What is penance? Like that. The Prabhupada gives very simple, straightforward meanings to them. Right? Because that's what the Shastra. The whole point of the Shastra, all these different rules, is that you'll develop a particular mood. Right? But because people are distracted from that mood by the externals of the material energy, through those forms of material energy that give activities that are in line with that, but are not opposed or are supportive of devotional service. You know what I'm saying? Therefore, then you think it's like we're supposed to give up material endeavor. So therefore, if we don't eat or only eat once a day or only do this or do that, then we feel, you know, I'm doing something giving up material energy. Right? But the real point is engaging in Krishna's service. Right? But from that platform of Naishkarmya, that it's being done to please Krishna, not to please myself. Does that make sense? So that's why it doesn't matter. That's why Ambarish Maharaj is given as the perfect example, one who engages all the limbs in the devotional service, right? He's a Grihastha, he's a king, he's an emperor of the world. You can't get more material facility than him. But he's given an example. Not because he has more facility, just because of his mentality. You know? Does that make sense? So that's the point, is that ultimately it doesn't matter where you're situated. It matters how much you're absorbed. Right? So therefore you always have examples of very nice grihasthas who are more Krishna conscious than the brahmacharis and sannyasis. Right? At the same time, you also have so many stories of where the brahmacharis and sannyasis are so much more Krishna conscious than the grihasthas. Right? The point is you can be Krishna conscious in either, you can also miss the whole point in either. So what is good for you, what actually is the best for your conditioned nature to advance in Krishna consciousness, that's where you should be situated. So if you could be a brahmachari and didn't really need to be a grihastha, why would you be a grihastha? But if you needed to be a grihastha, then why would you be a brahmachari? You know what I'm saying? Because the point is body, mind, and words must be fully engaged in the Lord's service. Does that make sense? So whatever situation is going to get you there. So even if one wants to get married, then one must spend some time as a brahmachari so he learns these principles that we mentioned here. Because without those same principles, you will not be a good grihastha. Right? It means your previous, this old school, you know, that they are doing nice in the grihastha ashram and all these different things. That's because they learn these things from their parents, their family, their environment. You know what I'm saying? They may not be able to articulate it, they may not even know why it works, but they just know, they just do it. But because they can't explain it, then the kids don't follow it. And nowadays, now things don't work. Right? Isn't it? You know, before it's that, you know, the movie is, then, you know, whatever it is, the boy and girl, it's a difficult, but they finally get together, and they're together forever, right? But now it start off, and they've already been through this one, divorcing that one, dropping this one, married to that one, get involved with that one, this and that, you know, very Bombay Hindu, right? Right? It's just the way it is. Because they don't know, they wouldn't have a clue how to make a marriage work now. Well, previously they know. The men were always humble. Nowadays, you know, it's like attitude makes everything work. Attitude doesn't make anything work. Nothing. Zero. You know, attitude looks good in front of the mirror. But other than that, there's no other use to attitude. You understand? That's why you see these older, they're very gentle. You know, they're clean, they're gentle, right? They're humble. They're generally very knowledgeable. They're very expert in their area, whatever it is that they're, how they're taking care of, whatever they're doing. They're very respectful. They're always very active, have a good service at it. They're always busy. They're never lazy. And that's why it works. If you take the modern, they don't do any of that. They have attitude, expect the other party to do everything. They have no knowledge, they have no respect. Right? They don't have sense control. So then how it'll work? Right? And if I say, okay, you want to make a chutney, you have to have salt, you have to have sugar, you have to have chili, right? And you have to have sour. You put all that together, you have a chutney. You know? But what happens if you don't put those together? I leave the sour out, will it be a chutney? No. Right? I leave the salt out? No. So you have to have all of them. So that's the point, is that people nowadays have no idea what culture is. And the worst is they're taking it from those who absolutely failed in culture and then thinking that's the way to go. It looks like it's a good time, but for how long? Right? Before it was, you know, that they worked hard, they got the extremely beautiful, qualified girl, and they were together the rest of their lifetime. Time, right? Now you pick her up at a bar, and you're with her one night, and after that, that's it. She's off with someone else. So which of the two is better? The first or the second? First, okay. So then if the first is better, then why one wouldn't follow the Indian principles of human life? Why would you follow the Western? Does that make sense? So that's the thing.
Devotional service, like most trying to develop more of this, whatever we are doing, so that we'll be free from the sufferings what we are reading. So, you know, like most of the services, what I am doing to develop, to overcome that suffering, on artful level. As Prabhupada was there, his disciples, they had so much love for him, they were ready to sacrifice everything for him and surrender and do so much service. But for myself, it is like more on artful level. It is overcoming the sufferings and trying to how to overcome this situation and come to a platform of knowledge where we get a desire to serve spiritual master, not thinking about our suffering or pain.
So if someone is artha or artharthi,
another question?
As I'm saying, is someone's an artha, artharthi, or jigyasu? Then how do they overcome that position and come to a, you know, that they're doing it to please Krishna? An example is given is that Prabhupada's disciples, then basically they weren't worried about these other things, they just out of affection for Prabhupada were moving forward. Point is, it doesn't matter where you start from, that's not the point, it's where you end up. Right? Does that make sense? So the field of activities is what you work with, but it's what you want to do with the field that's important. You understand? You have a field of activities, you can do anything with that field, you know? So now, are you operating that field to please Krishna or not? Right? So you want to overcome and get out of the pain of the material world, okay, but once you've gotten rid of the pain, then what? Right? Mm-hmm. I've been outside, it's very hot. I come inside, there's a nice fan or an AC blowing. I sit down, oh, this is very nice, it's very cool and very pleasant. But after 10 minutes, then you're cool. Then what do you do? What does the cool dude do once he's cool? Right? Nothing, he gets bored. Right? So then he's got to call up for a pizza or call up some friends or, you know, do something, watch a movie. Right? You know what I'm saying? So just being cool is not enough. right? You have to do something. So therefore, just getting rid of the pain of the material world, okay, that's nice, but once you've done that, then what? Then what are you going to do for eternity? Right? You spend this lifetime getting rid of the pains of the material world, great, but then what do you do for eternity after that? Does that make sense? So that's why we focus more on the service itself and the pleasure to Guru, Krishna, and the Vaishnavas. Because getting rid of the pain in the material world, that just is a side thing. Right? Does that make sense? It's not that important. If you become Krishna conscious, that will go anyway, because the pain in the material world is a consciousness. It's not a reality. You understand? It's only painful because you think it's important. So you're happy when there's a gain in that field and unhappy when there's a loss in that field. Right? Does that make sense? Right? No? You walk down the street. You know, you see a Mercedes and a BMW, you know, turn the corner at the same time and smash into each other and bend their bumpers. Right? And then the two, you know, drivers get out and then they start arguing with each other, you know, whose fault it was, right? And you just kind of look at it and go, wow, okay. And then keep walking. Any pain was there? No. But those people who own the cars, it's a big problem, right? And then you're laughing about, wow, those guys are so attached. Then you get back, you know, to wherever you're walking, where your car is parked, and find your bumper is bent, then we see what's the pain. Does that make sense? So the point is it's you apply it over. Does that make sense? You apply it over the what exists. Material energy just has all these different forms. Then we decide which ones we like and which ones we don't. Right? So the ones we like, then those give us pleasure, the ones we don't give us pleasure, right? Or if we don't have life, then it's neutral, we don't care, right? Well, does that make sense? So the point is we perform our devotional service because of actually, it's the nature of the soul, it's what we should be doing. We're suffering because we're not performing the activities of the soul. If we perform properly the activities of the soul, we don't suffer. Right? But to properly perform the activity, so that will inspire us, but properly perform the activity of the soul so we don't suffer means we have to actually please God. Because not suffering is not enough. The soul is Satchitananda. Right? It's not Satchit and kind of okay. Okay? Ananda means it's happiness. Happiness means it's relationship. Right? So in other words, relationships have gone very bad for you, therefore you're looking for situations where these relationships won't go bad, and the easiest is just get rid of relationships. Right? But better to cultivate the attachment to Krishna and the spiritual concept of relationship rather than looking for some mundane ideal in things and be disappointed. Right? Because in the material world, you can always find some fault, right? Or you can always look and find no fault. Depends on your vision. Does that make sense? Because the problem is we want to get rid of the pain. Depending on what it is, pain comes from others. Then you'll also have a tendency to avoid relationships with others. Because it may become painful at some point. Like that, but that's not so good. Right? In other words, you want to gain something, you have to take a risk. Right? Where you're successful in life is where you're willing to take the risk. Right? The businessman is willing to risk money, therefore he's successful. Someone who's not willing to risk money, he works for those businessmen. Right? Because he gets paid every week. The businessman may be paid, may not be paid. Right? So that's where his risk is. So where you're willing to take the risk is where you advance. Does that recognize that. What's your idea? Yes.
I am confused when Krishna is asking us to surrender Sarvadharma Prakrutimana. And Prahlad Maharaj mentioned in Bhagavatam that sukha and dukkha, pain and pleasure are already predestined. Means we are just like puppet, program, computerized. Everything is already being done. And then why we are wasting our time for things and not to surrender to Krishna, who will take, who promises Kunte Pratijani Rama Bhakti Pranasti. And he is ready to give us so much time, means he is promising us, and he has already proved, he has done even for Putana, who has, which. So why should we waste our time for material prosperity or economic development and not devote our full time for Krishna only? Why is not being done?
Okay, so why would the living entity waste his time in material endeavor, especially that whatever one's due will come, whether one endeavors or not, when Krishna promises so much if we surrender to him and take up his service? Why do we persist in endeavoring for those things that, you know, will already come? Basically, it's, we're so used to things working in a particular way, and we're used to that, and we think we're somehow or another still going to get something out of it. And so then the faith in that everything will be taken care of and with Krishna then is not complete. Not that it's not there, but it's not complete. So one has faith, that's why one's in Krishna consciousness, practicing Krishna consciousness, because one has faith in Krishna. But at the same time, is there's so many things that one feels one needs to take care of. One needs to take care, oh, what about the family, what about this, what about so many different things. So both are there. So it's only when one sees that there is nothing in these other things, or they go on anyway, that one can do. But that has to be realized. Right? The knowledge of it is enough that we practice it in such a way that that direction we endeavor for. But knowledge isn't enough to create, how do you say, the value. You know what I'm saying? Means that the natural practice that takes practice with knowledge, then we'll get realization. So that practice then means with that knowledge of the, you know, how things work in the material world, the metaphysics, then we engage those areas that are our distraction from full surrender to Krishna in Krishna's service. But with knowledge, if we engage all those things nicely, but without knowledge, then it's just nice. But it won't get us out of the material world. We'll get a nice result, but it won't get us out of the material world. We don't follow the Vedic principles, then it doesn't give us a nice result. In other words, if one's pious, it gives you a nice result. Impious gives you a bad result. But if it's engaged in Krishna's service, then it removes the need for it. So if by hearing the philosophy, by taking up the chanting process, by associating with devotees, one's immediately able to give up all those things and situate oneself nicely, great. That's the best option. It's the most practical, straightforward. But if not, then one engages those things that are one's attachments or needs in Krishna's service according to Krishna's direction to please Krishna. That's what Gita is saying. Do your duty without attachment, right? Without desire for the result, for me, thinking of me, right? And in devotion, right? So he's saying, perform your duty, that's karma yoga, right? With knowledge, jnana yoga, thinking of me, jnana yoga, and to please him, so that's bhakti yoga. So that combination, that's buddhi yoga, Right? Does that make sense? So, therefore, Krishna goes through it. He takes Karma Yoga, right, the third chapter, then Jnana Yoga. Then he combines the two in the fourth, you know, then brings out the Krishna action in Krishna consciousness. The difference is the one was just performing karma, the other is karma with knowledge. That's bad. Then Dhyana Yoga. Right? So he's showing how all these different things are different levels and they have their application. Right? That's Buddhi Yoga. It's intelligently engaging your occupation in Krishna's service from the platform of Naishkarmya, from Vairagya. Right? So I'm performing my karmic duties with knowledge and detachment. Because right? The detached person, the jnani doesn't engage in any karma. But if they're already pure, it works. But if they're not pure, there's no way to adjust that. Right? The karmi is performing the activity because it's attached, but he doesn't have the knowledge, so therefore he remains attached. So then when one performs the activities of karma with knowledge and detachment, then that frees one from the material world. So if one understands this, it doesn't matter what varna or ashram you follow, you can become liberated from the material platform. That's what's different about the devotional service, that's different from the general Vedic application. You know, the non-Krishna application means you perform your karmic duties very nicely, that will bring you to the platform of jnana eventually after many lives, then as a jnani that will make you advance. And so millions and millions of lifetimes go by, you will progress and you'll become more and more pure. And then, maybe, but most likely not, you'll get out of the material world. Because if we think about it, who has ever gotten out of the material world? Right? Here we have some names. Those who have actually freed themselves of the material world, who are not devotees. Do you have a name? Means, anybody, is there anyone who followed the Vedic culture, freed themselves, means liberated themselves from material nature and were not devotees? You understand? It's a possibility, but it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
That's the point. You could do it. Right? You could win the lottery for a crore of rupees, but it doesn't happen. Right?
Then why there is so much contradiction, initially confused us why 97% Shastra talk about Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha, and then Gita or Bhagavatam they are talking only to surrender is pure bhakti. So why we have been confused by all these Vedas, Purana, Upanishads, Shastras, all this, and then finally, because majority of the people are in the clutches of these pandas, sadhus and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So till Prabhupada came out and he has given us, it's so confusing for the people, you see. When we talk to them, Karma Yoga, they say only Karma Yoga. They don't want to read even the second line of it also.
Mm-hmm.
Karma, Gita is talking about Karma.
Yeah, Karma Yoga Vikaras Te. You have a right to perform your duty, but Ma Phalesha Kadachana, that they don't read.
No.
So why is it that the Shastras then would confuse one with Dharma, Artha, Kama and Moksha when the actual principle is Bhakti? Because technically, well, two things. One is that most people in this world are not interested in Bhakti. Therefore, if they follow the Vedic culture, at least they're following the same culture as the devotees, and that makes it easier for the devotees. Right? You know, it's just like if you go back, you know, 20, 30 years, it was so much easier to live the lifestyle as a devotee, right? The dress was easily available, the food's easily available, the way people would deal and dress and everything and interact was, it was the same like devotees would. But it was for Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha. It was Hindu, it wasn't Bhakti. So the culture is common. Then it's a matter, those persons were also easier in one sense to get to take up the devotional process. Of course, then they had so many misunderstandings of the Vedic, so that would also make it harder. It would be harder for them to move from Hindu to devotee like that. Like nowadays, it's easy to just, they just become devotees. But then the problem is they don't have the culture to back it up, you know. So that's the thing. The older people are very cultured, but hard to accept the philosophy. Young people accept the philosophy, don't know the culture, you know, like that. So, but the principle is that at least the devotional principles for those who are following aren't disturbed. That's one aspect, why it would be like that. Because if everybody follows the Vedic culture, it's progressive. They follow the Shastra, it's progressive. Because if you follow Shastra, means you have a guru. You know, you follow the scriptures, you have satsang, all these things that are important, like that. There's some sadhana. Problem is, it's just they don't know what is real guru, what is real satsang, what is the real understanding of the scriptures. So that's one aspect. The other aspect is because dharma, artha, kama, and moksha are all part of bhakti. They're actually not different from bhakti. But they've been separated from bhakti, therefore we give it that name. Right? Does that make sense? Just like, let's say, if someone is cooking, they'll go into the kitchen, clean the kitchen, wash the pots, get the vegetables, cut them up, then they'll cook, then after cooking, they'll transfer everything, and then they'll serve prasad. Right? And that's somebody who's a cook, you know? Like that. And everybody will agree that was cooking. What if somebody only washes pots and cleans the kitchen? Are they a cook? No, they're a pot washer. What if they only cut sabji? Right? Then they're not a cook. They're a kitchen assistant, right? Or if they grind the spices, then they have a special name. I forget what it was. Maslachi or something like that. It means they just grind spices. Like that. But they're not a cook. Right? And if they serve prasad but don't cook, they're a waiter. Right? Does that make sense? So in the same way, dharma, artha, karma, moksha are all part of devotional service, but if someone just follows dharma or karma or moksha or like that, they get a different name. Because they're not following in devotional service. Does that make sense? Because devotees are religious. They do things that are progressive, that generate, you know, money. They engage the senses. They get become freed from material entanglement. Right? So the process is the same. It means if you want to be religious, whether you're a devotee or not, it's the same shastra. Right? You want artha, it's the same method. Right? Devotee follows Chanakya. Non-devotee follows Chanakya. It's the same method. Right? Right? As a devotee, he wants to make money in a business. It's the same method. Just one is doing it for Krishna and one is not. But it doesn't change the thing. So the one, you'll say he's a businessman. Right? But the devotee, you just say he's a devotee. You don't say he's a businessman. Right? Even though he's a successful business, you don't call him a businessman. Right? He does business as an occupation, but he's not a business. But the other one, he is a businessman. Because he just, everything's in line with business, right? Even his family life, his social life, everything's business. So that's the difference. When you take that aspect of devotional service, when you engage the body in activities, that's karma. If you don't do it for Krishna, it's called karma. You do it for Krishna, it's karma yoga. Right? But you have to have knowledge. So that's jnana. But if you do it for Krishna, it's jnana yoga. You combine the two, that's called naishkarmya, right? Where you perform activities without desired result, that's naishkarmya, right? It'll free you from the material nature, right? Even the impersonalists will talk naishkarmya, right? But they haven't figured out that I don't have to do what I'm doing to get free from material nature. I can do what the others are doing and become free. You know what I'm saying? So they don't apply the naishkarmya fully. Like that. So it's not a lower platform. It's just the process. Because whether you're engaging attachment or detachment, according to Shastra, without the desire for the result, that's naishkarmya. Because detachment's also another form of attachment. You're attached to not being attached. Right. Does that make sense? Like that. So that's a little. Is that okay? What is it? Your lunch is at 1 o'clock. A little bit more. These papers. Taking the order of the papers appearing, or by size of the papers? Or how to develop the feelings of gratitude, okay, towards a person who is very, I mean, it looks extremely attractive as handwriting, but it needs some serious deciphering. It means revealing the Dham. Okay, where I come from, the first letter is an M, the third letter is a U. Like that. And just like gratitude, the first letter is a Y. And then the second letter is either an M or an R. There's an R here. Okay, so it's very attractive handwriting, but that's why nowadays in school they demand you to use computers and type. Okay. How to develop feelings of gratitude towards a person who is revealing the Dham. You have to value the Dham. You don't value the Dham, what do you care if they reveal it or not? Does that make sense? It doesn't make sense. See, Krishna consciousness is the most practical of all philosophies and lifestyles. Right? So I could say some sentimental aspect, but the point is what's the big deal about revealing the Dham? What's so special? Why should you have gratitude for someone who reveals the Dham? Unless you consider the Dham special, you won't feel gratitude. So if you want to know how to develop gratitude for someone revealing the Dham, you have to appreciate the Dham. The Dham has to be special for you. Of course, that person revealing it by their revealing the Dham makes you appreciate it, so therefore, and that's there. But the point is how would you show gratitude for anything? Right? What's your process? Go out and buy them a box of, cashew burfi, and give them that nicely, you know, nice yellow wrapping, and you know, give it to them. Or by practicing, yes. Right? Knowledge is reciprocated by practicing it. Right? So, in other words, if there is the idea that the Dham is special, then there would be automatic, respect for someone who is therefore revealing it. Then having revealed it and then now appreciating the nature of the Dham, then that respect would get more. Then one would practice it. Because if you don't practice, what's the use? Right? To say this was great, this was nice, but you don't practice, then, you know, it was nice for that moment. It's culture was correct, culture was proper. But unless you follow it, then what's the meaning? Does that make sense? Yes, no? Okay. So I don't know. 3 points here, whether it's, how you say it. Although there are 33 crores of demigods, why do we find temples of very few demigods like Ganesh, Shiva, etc.? We don't find temples of Indra, Chandra, Varuna, etc. Why? Is this a burning problem? Now, can you understand, if you had even one of every demigods' temples in Bombay, where would people live or do business? In Lord Shiva's temple, why there is no deity form of Lord Shiva? Instead, there is a Shiva linga. I mean, is that a problem? I'm saying, are there these real problems? See, the reason there's only a few is because most people don't know there's all of them. Because the real system for worshipping the demigods, if you want to successfully worship a demigod as a demigod, then you have to worship all 33 million of them. You don't, it's offensive. Right? So most people are offensive, so therefore they don't have much knowledge, therefore they only worship a few deities. Right? But if you worship only one without worshiping the other, then what's it mean? If I come up to you and shake only the last little digit on your little finger and only talk to that, oh, hi, how are you today? You know, good to meet you. It's kind of like, you know, what's wrong with this person? You know? So that's the point. Each demigod is one part of the whole body. So you have to worship the whole body. That's why in the demigod worship, you worship Vishnu, and then you worship, offer the remnants of them to that particular demigod as a devotee of Vishnu. Then you can do one. But then you're worshipping devotees. Most people don't do that. They have their shaligrams, it's there, they worship, they offer the prasad, but they don't understand the process, therefore it's offensive. Does that make sense? That's why the non-devotees are doing, you know, some puja, we don't accept that prasad, because it's not prasad, right? The demigod's not going to accept it without it being offered to Vishnu, and Vishnu's not going to be accepted if you don't understand what's going on. Right? So it's a problem. But if the devotee is doing, then it's not a problem, because it's already Vishnu prasad, and so then the demigod is senior to us, they get it first, it's not a big deal, right? It's not that, oh, they gave it to him and he's senior to me, so therefore I won't take it, right? Oh, he joined the temple a week before me and they gave it first, so I can't take the prasad. You understand? Right? Why the linga? Is there any problem with the linga? It's very nice, you can bathe it. Does that make sense? Is there a problem? See, Shiva is the masculine principle. Right? Everything has been generated from him. Does that make sense? So then it is the masculine form. So it's not a problem. They do have temples, they put on them. Many times you see them put a kavach on or the face. Some of the lingas had faces on them. Like that. That's generally because he's like that. There's a story, I think it's when Brihaspati. I think it's that story. I'm not sure. But in some one story, he got cursed that he would just be worshipped as a linga. Is there a concept of prana petition when installing deities of demigods? Well, this person really has a problem. Do we have some? Is there a smart to hear in the crowd? So you make your living by installing deities? I mean, I don't mind. If that's what you do for a living, then fine. Why? Of course it's prana pratishtha. It's a Vedic concept. It's just what mantras you're using and what is your parampara. That's all. That's the point of the Vedic. There's no difference in the process of someone who's, let's say, a Kali worshipper and someone who's a devotee of Krishna. You still have guru, you still have shastra, you still have mantra, you still have sadhana. But it's just a matter of what kind of guru, what kind of shastra, what kind of sadhana. That's why Prabhupada says that the Kali worshipper is superior to someone, let's say, who's a Christian, because they're following the Vedic principle, while the other one isn't. What is Christian food? Is there a mention? Sorry. Christian dress. Christian lifestyle. How does a Christian eat lunch? Right? How does he clean his mouth? How does he take a bath? Is there anything? No. So therefore, then that person takes up Krishna consciousness. Where does it work? How does it work? Where's the authority? So they have no lifestyle. It would be the local application of it, but that's about it. Right? Some places they allow the Christians to follow their own lifestyle, just, you know, put Christ into it, and some where they don't allow them to do that. But otherwise, what's the cause? So therefore, that's why it's better. So, of course, there's a competition. Yes. Okay. What is the place of doctors, engineers in Varnashram Dharma? Doctors, comma, engineers. Means as doctors and engineers, or doctors as engineers, or doctors and engineers. Why only doctors and engineers? You don't want to know about architects or accountants or But what is their place in Varnashram Dharma, meaning? Is it important to know? Doctors in the Vedic system would be Brahmins, because they're supposed to know about Ayurveda, so that means they know the Shastras. The engineers are Stapatis, so they're actually a special class of Shudras. Right? They're the only Shudra that actually gets initiated into the Veda and wears a Brahmin thread. But they're Shudras. Because they're only initiated into that part of the Veda. Because they have to deal with the Veda, because the Veda explains what the deities look like, so they have to deal with it. They know the shlokas, they have to memorize the shlokas. Therefore, they're the only Shudra that actually wears a thread, but they're still Shudras. Okay, that's the engineer. Architect may be another thing, probably. But otherwise, as the Stapati, he understands from Shastra what is the design. He knows how to do all the measurements, right? He knows how to measure, he knows how to cut, and he knows how to do the designs, right? So he knows all four. While someone else only knows how to carve the stone, or how to measure the stone, or how to cut the stone. But you can design, measure, cut, and work it. Does that make sense? But the point is that one's supposed to then... understand? Point is that one's engaging this in the Lord's service, in some way or another. Then things work. But I mean, even you take doctors, they work for a hospital as a job, and there's an administrator that runs it. So what does that technically make them?
Shooters.
Yeah, so the modern bourgeois very cleverly made everybody into shooters. You're talking about absorption. We get absorption when we like something. But we don't like to wake up for Mangal Arati chant, so how do we get absorbed? Well, there's a matter of first we become inspired, then we become absorbed, right? So that's why we have temple commanders. They're very inspiring in the morning. They have so many tricks, right? They can talk nicely, they can yell, they have buckets of water, like that. Really good, this is a technique. Take the water out of the tap the night before when everyone takes rest and leave it out on the veranda. Right? Then it'll be nice and cold, right? So then if you can't get them up with the fresh bucket of water, try that one. Okay? Means absorption is that we need to be fully absorbed, body, mind, and words. So that's why we find something that does. In the beginning, we may not be. So that's why others find things that will keep us busy. That's why we don't have time in the beginning to sit around and think, because what we'll think of may not be very useful. Right? Someone who can sit around and think of something useful, they're giving the time to think. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. So someone who can't, the mind's not engaged, the words aren't engaged, so therefore they engage the body. You know, they clean, they get up, they follow the sadhana, go here, go there, stand up, sit down, and like that, you're engaged because you think you're the body, keep the body busy, then you're engaged. Does that make sense? Then as you become purified, then the intelligence and mind start to work properly. Then those can also be engaged. Then it's a matter of you start having choice, what service you want to do, how do you want to do it. As it becomes more, then you actually take responsibility, and then you yourself think up how to make things work. But you can't do that in the beginning because you think you're the body, so therefore the mind and intelligence won't act properly. Does that make sense? So that's why the sadhana is important, because it will get you out of that, but with time then the other aspects kick in, becomes more complete. Right? Because you think you're the body, therefore your mind's absorbing the body, your intelligence is over the body. By engaging the body, you are body, mind, words engaged. Right? Does that make sense? So it's good, it's not a bad thing. Right? That's why Prabhupada made temple commanders. They're a good thing. You know, believe it or not, they are. Right? Right? Is that okay? What is your viewpoint about the food habits of a brahmacharya, which will help him in maintaining his brahmacharya? Oh, okay, that's the other. I see. Food habits. Basically, you take the temple prasad at the time of the temple prasad, then you generally have no problem, because then it's regulated. Right? Regulation is the main thing. Anything you want to control, you regulate it. Like that. Anything. You know, even if somebody has a bad habit, let's say they smoke all day. Okay, that's not regulated. You make it they can smoke after they eat. And that's it. Right? Very quickly they'll give it up. Because if you can do it, if it's all right to do it, and you know, then it's inspired, but you have a specific time only, then it gets really boring. Right? It's the spontaneity of something that makes it nice, right? Isn't it? You know, if Pizza Hut closed at 9 o'clock, Bombay would be boring, right? But you can get one at 1 o'clock in the morning, right? That's what makes it exciting. Does that make sense? Yes? No? So that's the point. You regulate something, and then it loses its interest. So you regulate prasad, then that, you know, specific, you know, drive to eat anything and everything then goes, because it's regulated. But the prasad should be nice, you know, should be properly cooked, properly served, proper environment and everything like that, so one is satisfied taking prasad. Because if not, then, because if the tongue is satisfied, then all the other senses are adjusted, right? Like that. So that's it. If there's good prasad, brahmacharis don't go anywhere. So, you know, they can sleep on the floor, sleep in a closet, it doesn't matter as long as prasad's good. Right? If prasad's not good, then they start thinking about marriage. But even that won't be successful, because nowadays all the girls are career women, they don't know how to cook anyway. So you got a problem. So the temple authorities who see that the prasad is nice, then the brahmacharis don't go anywhere. Like that. I mean, it means it's real. The better the quality of prasad, means nicely cooked, properly cooked, you know, proper, you know, everything matches. You know, like not like dal and popcorn, you know, like that. Some temples they do stuff like that. So does that make sense? Things to watch out for if one is even following that's a difficulty. Too much milk products. You know what I'm saying? Too much milk products. It can generate lust in the body. If it doesn't, fine. Take how much you want. But if you find that, you know, after eating that 3 kilos of, you know, burfi, you know, your mind's going a little crazy, next time only eat 1 kilo. Okay. Does that make sense? Also, that basically all Gurukuls in India, they don't use eggplant, green chilies, or tamarind. Because all of those three make the semen thin. When the semen's thin, it drops. Right? Does that make sense? So therefore, be careful. Tamarind you can use in the summertime. It's not a problem. You know, like when it's the hottest time, you know, like April, May, June, those times you use it, then it's cooling, it's no problem. Other times, you have to be careful. Of course, if you're South Indians, you got a problem, you know. Then you grew up with it, so, you know, it doesn't matter so much. I think Gujaratis also use a lot of tamarind.
Timing of prasadam, which is suitable for rosaries.
Say again?
Timing of prasadam.
Timing of prasadam. You shouldn't go to sleep with a heavy stomach. Should be early enough eating your latest meal that when you sleep, then like that. So you have to see it works. You either eat a big, you know, medium breakfast, full lunch, and something very small in the evening, or you eat, you know, in the morning and the evening, but early enough that, you know, sleeping is not disturbed. You know what I'm saying? Like that. But generally those things. Eggplant can be used, but not in excess. You know, green chilies also, you can use some, but don't, you know, serve them on the side and eat them like that. You know what I'm saying? If you don't have any problem, don't worry about it. I'm just saying, but if you have problem, then these are things to look at. Right? You know, if you eat all these things, you know, breakfast means, you know, a jar of, you know, green chili achar with fried eggplants and, you know, a tamarind drink like that, then hey, you know, and it works and you're very peaceful, then go for it. But I'm just saying, if you have a problem, then look at these three. Excessive milk products, excessive chili, excessive tamarind, or excessive eggplant. Chili also means to a less degree, but also watch too much bell peppers, capsicums. But I don't think you guys use that much anyway. So. Oh, another thing, yogurt at night. Makes you cool, makes you sleep well, but so be careful about that also.
The lifestyle of goodness makes it also work efficiently. And I would like to ask that how we should maintain, first of all, how it works.
How does the mode of goodness work? Means?
Somebody's working in the mode of goodness.
Someone's working in the mode of goodness.
Yeah. So he is more efficient and more productive.
He is more efficient and more productive.
Yeah. And how this thing happens, takes place, is one thing. Another thing.
How does which thing? Means how does one situate oneself in goodness, or how is it that someone working in goodness?
How is formula being
why is it efficient?
Why is the mode of goodness efficient rather than mode of passion or ignorance?
Yeah, like, and in the modern, when we are seeing city and living a lifestyle of city, then how to maintain this mode of goodness?
How to maintain the mode of goodness in the city?
Like passionate person seems to be more active, more dynamic, more he's producing things and all this thing. But a person goodness doesn't seem to be doing like that.
He doesn't seem to be doing
so
like that.
How he produces more, how is he more efficient than a passionate man?
Than the passionate man. Okay. Just to take the passionate man and the peaceful man. Okay. Let us say we meet this passionate man. Okay? Okay. Well, I'm just trying to phrase it so you can get the understanding. Let us see we meet a passionate man who is, you know, very much engaged in economic development. Right? Passionate is, you know, what we would take as, you know, Hindi movie passionate. Right? Okay? Then let us say we meet someone who is from a family that generationally they've been wealthy. They have big, huge businesses, everything like that. They're very wealthy, very well established, and we meet them. Of these two persons, who is the bigger business person, who's more wealthy? And of the two, who will be more peaceful? The second one. Then? Passionate just means he's running around. But the point is the other person, he hires people to run around for him. He hires passionate people. Right? Does that make sense? Because he's intelligent. Does that make sense? See, you're dealing with, I'll give you the technical answer, let's hope it works. See, what are you dealing with if you want to make money? What is that money? Is it Purusha or property? Okay. Anything you deal with, what's it made out of? Okay, so that means it's energy. Okay, now as we mentioned, then the masculine principle is Sankarshan, right? Or Atmarama. There's no feminine manifestation. But if we manifest the feminine nature, that is Prayojana, right? The masculine is Sambandha, the feminine is Prayojana, right? That's your goal, you're trying to opulence, right? So now when that reflects in the material world, Samanda becomes ignorance. Prayojana becomes goodness. Right? So opulences are only gained through utilizing the mode of goodness. Your desire to get them, you may be in the mode of passion, but the technique you use has to be in the mode of goodness. Right? Unless you deal with the object according to its nature and according to what it can produce, you won't get anything from it. Does that make sense? You have your iPod, okay. Will it work if you don't plug it in? Will you get any sound if you don't use the earplugs? What if you don't push the buttons? So all those things are according to your desire or according to the need of the machine. Right? Does that make sense? So, someone successful who knows how to deal with the nature of whatever they're dealing with. Right? So if I deal with it according to its nature and only expect a result at what it can give when it can give it, and only in response to my dealing with it properly, you get a result. Does that make sense? You understand that principle, you don't have to read any self-help books. Because that's all they're telling you. They don't know it, but that's what they're telling you. Know what is the field of activities, what is the nature of it, what are the relationships between each element in the field, and what is it that each element by being used can produce. Knowing that, then when you, have a result you want, you know which element of the field to engage, and then you engage it. Right? But you engage it according to its nature, not according to how you think. Right? So intelligence is knowing what the field is and how to use it. Right? So that's why you go to school and they teach you the field of activities. Right? They teach you techniques, but they don't teach you the mood, how to use it according to its nature. That's why when you come out of the school, you got your MBA, you're not a businessman. Right? You're not. You know the field of business, you know the techniques of business, but you're not a business person. And then what happens to the MBA? He's hired by a businessman. Right? The guy speaks Hindi, doesn't speak a word of English, sits around in his t-shirt chewing pod, and he's hired you who went to 24 years of school, well, actually 26 years of school, and he didn't go to any. And he's the Kaurapati, and you get your, you know, 1 lakh a year, or 120 a year, and that's it. You'll never get more, you won't get less, but you'll never get more. And that guy makes crores. Because he's a businessman. Because he knows how to deal with the field. You know what to do if you're told. But you don't actually understand the mood of the field. So that's the point. That's the difference. Does that make sense? So your inspiration to evolve in the field can be from goodness or passion. But the point is, passion, you'll make mistakes. Goodness, you won't. You have a plan, you stick to it, it's successful. You have a plan, you don't stick to it because of passion, you'll always fail. Anytime anyone fails in an economic endeavor, because they didn't stick to their plan, they changed it due to some feeling. Some fear, some anxiety, some greed, some... Right? That's why if you don't have sense control, you can't do business. Right? That's why the grihastha, I mean the vaishyas, go to gurukul. They learn to be sense controlled. Right? That makes sense. So these are all the things they don't teach you when you do your MBA. They'll never teach you because they don't know themselves. Right? If the guy's teaching the MBA, then why is he not doing it? Right? Does that make sense? Are the Hinduchas running MBA courses? Right? Are the Birlas? Right? Bajorias? Mafat Law? No. Some academic. How much does he make teaching that course? Not so much. What do you want? You understand? You know what I'm saying? But the businessman can make a businessman. How? He gives you a broom. Says, sweep the office. Right? And then come back after a few years, and that kid who was sweeping the office is now the CEO of the company. Right? No, the MBA walked in middle management, come back 20 years later, he's still in middle management. Come back 50 years later, he's still in middle management. Because he didn't learn what it means, you know, to be a business person. Right? So the whole point is without the character and all that, you can't do it. It's not a matter of academics. That's the modern academy's trick. To get you to go to their school and take your money. Right? Simply have a piece of paper, your life's successful. How many people in Bombay have pieces of paper and have no job? Right? And as that guy with no job walks down the street thinking, where am I going to get a job? He walks by thousands of people that have work, even run their own businesses but don't have an education. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is there is the knowledge of it, then there's actually the life of it. What makes a business person? What makes an administrator? What makes a Brahmin? You know, what makes an artist? That's a different thing. Right? You learn that from someone in that field. You learn business from a businessman, not from an academic. You learn administration from, you know, a combination of academics and administrators. Right? You learn academics from academics. Does that make sense? So you have to be able to divide between the work itself and the reason behind it, why you're doing it. Does that make sense? You take a knife, you cut a potato. So what mode is acting here? ignorance, because you're destroying the form of the potato. So therefore, we should ban all cooking because it's destructive. It's in the mode of ignorance, right? Right? Then we put it on the fire, and then it's the mode of passion, right? No, because your purpose behind it was the mode of goodness or transcendence, please Krishna. So the activities themselves are governed by modes. But what consciousness you do within, that determines what you get out of it. Does that make sense? You can understand, you have to be able to split the difference between how something operates. It means dealing with energy, you have to use the mode of goodness, doesn't matter what it is. The environment in which that's done may be in another mode, but the actual working with it still has to be according to the goodness. Energy will not respond to any other mode. Right? Passion, maybe, there's something, but it won't give a long-term result. Because you're doing it for yourself, so that means the energy then wants for themselves. But if you're doing for them, they'll respond. You know what I'm saying? That's why I said something's passionate. It's just short. It doesn't last. Because you're doing it for yourself, that means the other person to respond must do it for themselves. You're doing it for them, they'll respond by doing it for you. Does that make sense? So it's the only way. Now your approach to using that tool, that may be any mode. Does that make sense?
The second part of the question.
Second part of the question.
How to maintain the lifestyle of goodness.
How to maintain the lifestyle of goodness. Through knowledge. Through knowledge. Knowledge and practice. Good association. Right? So you're always hearing, studying, practicing, preaching. Then you'll be able to do it. Right? Not you means, you know, there are elements of your lifestyle and passion. Take those and engage those in Krishna service. Then they'll be purified. How to avoid bad lusty thoughts and have a celibate mind. How to avoid lusty desires and have a pure mind. Basically is don't give the mind enough time to get into that, therefore keep oneself busy. Right? So either intellectually or physically keep yourself busy, then the mind won't have that direction to go to. That's one thing. Two is if the idea is at some point in your life you get married, then know what's the use of fantasizing about things. Now is the point is to develop the proper character and, you know, his qualities needed to be a good grihastha. Because the qualities needed to be a good grihastha are the same as to be a good brahmachari, is the same to be a good devotee. Right? Because everybody in the cosmic creation is supposed to be a devotee. So that's the common qualities. Right? Then they may apply it through different means. Right? Does that make sense? The Brajavasis, they all have pure, unalloyed love for Krishna. That's the common element. But some like to serve Krishna through parental ras, friendship ras, or as cows, or as gopis, or... Does that make sense? Right? So the common point is the qualities required to be a good brahmachari are the same to be a good grihastha, to be a good sannyasi, to be a good devotee. Right? So one should focus on developing those. Otherwise one won't be successful. One will only have lusty desires and even if one gets married, still there'll be no fulfilling those desires. Right? Does that make sense? No wife says, oh, I love my husband so much because he has so many nice lusty desires. He thinks of so many lusty things. It's so cute. Ever heard that? No. Right? Because he's dutiful, he's tolerant, right? He deals nicely, he's gentle, you know, but he's not sentimental. He has standards. Right? Like that. These are the things that they appreciate. Right? Good looks, that's a side thing. They have them nice. They don't have them as long as the other qualities are there, it works. Right? Does that make sense? You know, the modern is a capitalistic trick to get you to spend all your money to try to look good because they say that's the only way you're going to be successful. Right? But there's plenty of successful people who don't necessarily look good. Right? The prime minister of the country is 16 years old, right? No? How old? 60, 70, 80. Right? How old is the chief of staff of the army? I mean, of the armed forces? How old are all the generals?
President of India.
Huh?
President of India.
Yeah.
80-year-old.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So, and if you talk to their wives, you know, if they're doing that, happy, they're not going, yes, he's so young and cute looking. You understand? So that's the reality, is what's the use of the lusty desires? Worry about the activities that you have to, qualities you have to have, that you could even function as a grihastha. Does that make sense? So, whether you want to be a nice sthika brahmachari or you want to get married, you only have one solution: becoming a good brahmachari. There's not a second option. You want to become successful in business. You want to be successful in administration. You want to become successful in art. You have to be a good brahmachari. Those same qualities are the same ones used in more maturity as grihasthas, as anything, as a devotee. Right? Humility, tolerance, respect for others, not expecting any respect for yourself. Right? That's how you make the devotional process work. Right? That's the Abhideya shloka of here. Right? Yeah. Does that make sense? So, if you don't have those qualities, it doesn't work. Right? So, brahmachari has to be humble, has to be tolerant, has to be respectful, not expect anything for himself, right? Because he's successful. So, you're successful as a devotee. You'll be successful as a grihastha. You'll be successful as a business person. You'll be successful as anything. Anybody who has these qualities is successful. Anyone who doesn't have these qualities, they're not successful. That's simple.
So long our devotional service is not pure, we're saying we have to sometimes dovetail our tendencies, dovetail our attachments, dovetail our qualities. What if, for example, our quality is unfavorable? Like what comes to mind is like laziness, the type of laziness which I struggle with. I can't imagine how to dovetail something like laziness.
Laziness. Okay, how do you dovetail a bad quality in Krishna service? How do you take laziness? Because the point is you have to look at everything has its two sides. Okay, laziness is there. Now, let us say you have a big factory. And there's 10,000 people working in that factory. And they're all running around. But the guy who owns the factory, he's sitting in one chair in one place. So you could say, very lazy man. You understand? But the point is lazy means then to that degree your intelligence and other things has to be working. If the body is not active, then that means the mind and the intelligence has to be active. Right? But if those aren't active, then it's pretty useless. Then all glories to the temple commander. He will find you. He will engage you. You know what I'm saying? So in that case, if it's, you're saying nature, but is it actually nature? Right? Because the soul is not inactive by nature. It's the mode of ignorance, but that's a covering. Right? Mirrors reflect. But if there's a lot of dirt, they don't. But that doesn't mean that's the nature of the mirror. No, that's the nature of a covered mirror. So by following the process, in other words, you voluntarily put yourself under someone that tells you what to do, even though you would rather be doing nothing. Right? Then, by the heart will become clean. And then you don't mind being active. Right? Does that make sense? Bhaktivinoda, of course, says one of the biggest cures for laziness is getting married. Because women will not tolerate for one nanosecond laziness. Right? That brings you to the mode of passion, because just to save your skin, you'll be active. Right? But then if you follow that according to Shastra, then you come to the mode of goodness. Right? So wouldn't it just be so much easier to just do what the temple commander says? It's a lot easier to please than wife. Ask any of the grihasthas, they'll confirm this point. You understand? So it's a matter of using the intelligence. Does that make sense?
As you were telling as brahmacharis, is the rules which are the principles, guidelines you give. In that, what happens is all people are on the same level. So many people, they find difficulty in following those principles, even being trained and all these things. A lot of balance goes on in that. Some people, they pick up very quickly, they go ahead very nicely. So how does system makes it sure that these things, they go on?
How does the system make sure that it goes on? Some people move quicker, slower. Point is if you have a goal, it means those who are running the system, if they have to understand what is the goals in that, then they apply whatever works for the individual to get them there. Does that make sense? So someone will move faster, someone will move slower. So that doesn't matter. But in that, because you're dealing also with naturally with those of like-mindedness, you have to group them accordingly. In other words, someone who will move at an appropriate speed, they can live in the temple as brahmacharis in the temple. Those that can't, then they should live at their house. Because in the temple, they become lazy, but at their house, they can't. You know, their mother, their sisters, grandmothers, they're all going to, you know, prod them along to become, you know, good, you know, how you say, wealthy, you know, socially acceptable people. Right? So they're forced to keep moving. Right? But if they come to the temple, no one tells them to do anything. So therefore, I mean, they do, but you know, you listen, you don't listen, it's not much. You know, the temple commander gets upset with you, he's got plenty else to do, he'll walk off, and he can still take a nap, right? Woman gets upset with you, she can walk off, but the emotional atmosphere she will leave you with, you can't do anything. So therefore, you know, they have methods that the temple commander, you know, does not have. So that's why those who can be through more of the intelligence can accept the system and agree to comply with it, they're the brahmacharis in the temple. Right? Those that can't, they should stay at home because they will progress quicker at home than they will at the temple. Right? And then, if they move into the temple, those lazy persons like that who aren't progressive and aren't like that, then the difficulty is they'll get so used to that lazy lifestyle that when they actually do move out, because they will, you know what I'm saying? Then they'll be at a loss what to do, because they won't be able to run their business, won't be able to do anything properly. Because in all those fields, you have to be active. Does that make sense? So that's why it's not actually, it's sentimental to let someone who's not qualified to live in the ashram live in the ashram. You know, like that. They're qualified, they live. In other words, someone should be situated where they're going to function best. So right now it's the need to get their degree, it's need to, you know, set up things, get successful, get money, get themselves situated so they get married. That's what's driving them. You take that away and they move into the temple, then they don't do anything. You understand? But someone who the spiritual endeavor and all that, that's what's driving them, and then by the association of others who are doing it, and by the temple commander, and by hearing lectures and all these things, then they become inspired. You know, it keeps it going, at least it's moving, then it works. And just both of them, given time, eventually come to the same point. You know, it's just like in Gita, you have the example of the devotee and the yogi. They follow their own paths, but they eventually get to the same spot, because it's not that the devotee gets to the spot of the yogi gets to the spot of the devotee. So the grihastha comes to the same point as the brahmachari. Right? The realization of the mature grihastha is exactly the same as the naisthika brahmachari. They don't need women. Right? It's not that I don't like women, I stay away from women, women are trouble. Those aren't what makes the naisthika brahmachari. Naisthika brahmachari is, I don't need women. Right? That's the difference. That's why a naisthika brahmachari can deal with the women, but the others can't, because they need them, but they're trying to stay away from them. You know? You're walking down the hall, some lady walks into the temple, doesn't know anything, excuse me, where's the temple? You know, and there's, oh, I'm brahmachari, you know, I talk to him, and then walk off. Wouldn't it just be easy? No, the temple's over there, walk off. What do you know? What's the big deal? You know what I'm saying? So that's how you can tell the difference. Women know the difference between the nice deacons and the others. Give them a list of all the brahmacharis in the temple, say tick off the good brahmacharis. They can do it. Give it to 10 women, you get back exactly the same result. Give it to the brahmacharis, they have various opinions who's the good brahmachari. Oh, he's tough, he's cool, you know, he's austere, yeah, he's this, that. And probably all of those ones, the ladies will set not brahmacharis. Simple one who just does his service, very pleasant with everybody, does everything very nicely, like that. That's the brahmachari. Everyone else is in the process of becoming one, but that person is one. Is that?
Like Sukadeva Goswami. Sukadeva Goswami was going naked.
Yeah, he's going naked. He's surrounded by women and kids, right? He doesn't care. They want to look. What does he care? They're wasting time. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is that the process is the same, so one has to commit to it. The point is focus. One knows that no matter what, if I want to become a gross materialist, I want to become a sadhu, or I want to become, you know, a nice pious grihastha, the process is still the same. Until you have these qualities, humility, tolerance, respect, and not expecting anything for yourself, you're not going to be successful in any sphere, because the point is God made the cosmic creation. So it works according to the way He says, not according to the way, you know, Harvard says, or, you know, something. No, it's the way Krishna says. That's it. Does that make sense? Intelligent people observe the material energy. They say it works like this, but they only see part of it. What they can see and what they can perceive is all they can tell you about. But God created it. He sees it all. So He tells you what's going on. So they don't know that over here, this thing over here doesn't work over there. That makes sense? What's the difference between weak-heartedness and compassion? Standards. Weak-heartedness means there's no standard. Compassion means there is a standard, but you're applying that standard according to time, place, and circumstance to fit the individual needs. elaborate. Liberality is simply narrow-mindedness that's just pushed to the left side of the political scale. And conservative is narrow-mindedness that's pushed to the right. Does that make sense? Right? Because the point is if one is so liberal, how come the liberals can't accept the conservatives? If you're liberal, then you accept everybody, but they can't accept conservatives. So that means they're actually not liberal. All it is the standards they have are generated from themselves and according to their sentiment and according to what's popular. You understand? So what they feel like, that is what they define as the right thing to do. Right? The conservatives is we have standards, we follow those standards. Right? But broad-minded is in the middle. Right? In other words, you have standards, but you can apply them to the individual. The conservatives can't apply it to the individual. It's by the book. And the liberals can apply it to the individual, but they have no book. Right? Broad-minded means how to apply the book to everybody. Right? Right? Megrahi the hunter. Right? What was his mantra? What was his his diksha mantra? Mara, death. Yeah, so that's... So could someone who was conservative give that mantra? Or someone liberal, whatever you like, you chant. Someone broad-minded knows the standard is chanting the Lord's name, and this guy's so sinful he can't chant it. Therefore, we just turn the name around, because whether the name is chanted frontwards or backwards, as long as all the syllables are there, you get the same effect. Right? It's like you have the name and something's inserted in the middle, and you have two syllables that make up, you still get the benefit. So therefore then, they gave him Mara to chant. Understand? That's why the preachers are so successful. Because they're able to apply the standards, right? Because the preachers are fixed. But they're the most compassionate. Right? The liberals are only compassionate to somebody who they don't feel is in any way, shape, or form exploiting anyone else. Only they're only compassionate to who they designate as a victim. But if you're a perpetrator, they have zero compassion for you. Zero. Less than the conservatives. Right? The conservatives will at least apply only what the book says. But the liberals will apply more than that because it's sentiment. Does that make sense?
I can understand. When we chant at that time, we try to plan the whole day, whole week, or whole year's program in spite of so many years of regularly chanting. How we can chant properly so that concentrate completely on the words of Mahamantra. Nothing should come in our mind. How we can do that?
How to get where when we're chanting that we're only focused on the holy name, even though we've been chanting for years and so many distractions and that. That's the point of the sadhana, is that this is means, in other words, when we accept that our material needs, properly engaged in Krishna's service, are okay, then we can actually be successful as sadhana. Right? In other words, we're worried that we're dealing with maya, so therefore it's maya, it's not good to deal with. But the point is for the conditioned soul, what does he have to deal with other than maya? right? You have the holy name, you have the deity, you have the Bhagavatam, right? But anything else is Maya, technically. This is made out of material energy, so there isn't something else. So the point is it's not the material energy that's the problem. It's not the relationships that are the material energy of the problem. The problem is do we engage them in Krishna service or not? That's Yogamaya or Mahamaya. Does that make sense? So if in our mind we accept that thinking about the family, thinking about our occupation, thinking about so many other things is okay, but it has its time and place and its method, then when we're chanting, we can just chant and we don't have to think of anything else. But the point is because we don't think it is, therefore then it tries to creep in. Right? Because we'll say, oh, it's Maya to think about the family and Maya to think about the business, but you have to. If you want to deal with them, you have to. So therefore then on the chanting, if it's accepted that we can think about that, but we'll think about business at business time, we think of family at family time. So we have sadhana, we have our family, we have our occupation. And when we're isha, we don't let the other ones interfere. Right? Like that. Of course, we can chant all the time. That's the beauty of it. It can go everywhere. But otherwise, then we have a set time we chant. That would be one aspect. Then it's like the mind knows, just like you're very hungry. And it's a fast day. But if we say, don't worry, at 2 o'clock we're taking prasad, then you can tell the mind, don't bother me until 2 o'clock. But at 2 o'clock, then there better be food. Right? So then that works. So therefore, if the mind is being bothered by family things, therefore when one's in the family, if one properly focuses and takes care of things properly, not just does a half job because it's Maya, but does a proper job, then you'll be able to also, in the same way when you're chanting, only chant. That would be one aspect. The other aspect is that when you're chanting, then the mind is going to, the chanting is going to purify the heart. And so in purifying, that means all those voluntary activities and desires and needs you've had that are being purified by the chanting, you still have to look at them and decide whether you still want to keep them or not. Because it's a voluntary process. So you voluntarily wanted to be absorbed in business and family and sense gratification, whatever else that is there. Then as the chanting purifies those, that it's actually getting rid of them, then they will go through the mind and you'll see them. Going through the mind, if you just let them go, they're gone. But if you contemplate them, then they're put back. It's like cleaning out the drawer or something. You haven't looked at that drawer for a year. You don't need anything in that drawer because you haven't used it. You can live without it. But as soon as I open that drawer and pull them out one by one, everything, oh, I need that, oh, that's valuable, oh, that's important, oh, that's where that is. So then I can't throw anything away. Right? But if it comes up and you just let it go, because I never use that, just let it go and it's gone. Does that make sense?
But Maya is so tricky that I may think that I will use anything in the service of the Lord, but actually, I'm using by my own sense gratification.
Yes, means she's tricky that she makes it sound like any, because anything can be used,
yeah.
But will you use? Right? Just like, let us say, if you want to be successful at clearing out, a closet, a locker, anything, a garage, then if you follow this formula, it will work. One is when you're going through it, separate everything into junk and valuable. That's easy to do. Right? Then once you've done, and the junk, throw it away. This is junk, just get rid of it. Then what's valuable, then separate into what you actually need and what you don't need. What others, it's valuable, you don't. That you give away or sell or whatever is appropriate. Then you only keep what you need. Because otherwise the normal thing is people go by, what I need is what's valuable.
Yeah.
But it's two different things. It's valuable. You only need something that's valuable. What's valuable doesn't mean you need it. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing, is that you go through like that. So it may be valuable, but do you need it? So then you contemplate it. So then in the day you contemplate the material energy, all the different elements of it, the values of it. You try endeavor for happiness, but it's not being got. You've tried it in so many ways. You've done everything right. But it, and even you get it, still then it's temporary. So what do you gain? So that contemplation, slowly, slowly the mind starts to loosen its tight grip on those things. But at the same time, you have to be cultivating the niceness of Krishna consciousness, the taste that is there, then the mind can latch onto that. Otherwise, it can only, for a short time, give up something. And that's only men. Men can, for a short time, give up things and not have latched onto something else, and they can function. But women, they'll only give up one thing by accepting another. And you'll notice that there's a time, like maybe the inchworm, it'll only put its lift up the back foot when the front foot's down. But there's a time when both feet are down. You know what I'm saying? So they have a whole closet of saris they won't use, but they have to have a closet of saris they will use and have both of them. Then they may start to think, okay, I don't need this to give it away. You can't say, get rid of all these ones you don't use, let's get ones you will use. It won't work like that. You know what I'm saying? Men can do that, women can't. So it means you have to replace it. Right? Then with time it seemed that the replaced is a more value and useful, and I never use the other, therefore then I can let it go.
One question which may not be applicable for many people, because I am 70 and I came in Krishna consciousness when I was 40. And as you said just now, when one is not a good brahmachari, or one is not a good gastha or sannyasi, he is not fit for anything actually. He cannot be good. Well, we are not good brahmachari, so how can we expect us to good grihastha? And in spite of the fact, well, last 15 years I am in a vanprastha ashram, but the desire felt, this is not imposed, I am not sannyasi. Mm-hmm. Now but the desire for sense gratification is still there. So how, because I was not a brahmachari and following that system, so how to come out of that desire?
Okay, did you all hear? Yeah? Okay, so basically it's the same process. I'm just saying is the other one makes it very easy. And the other one, it's just like, let us say, you have ability in an area. So if you have training in it, it'll make it so much easier. If you don't have training, you'll figure it out, right? Let's say a boy is a business nature. So no one trains him in business, he'll go out and start, and he'll figure it out. It may take him 10 years, but he'll figure it out. Now if he had studied under his father or uncle or brother, then in 3 years he's a good businessman. The other way he's 10 years. But in either way he works it out. So the point is by the principle of naishkarmya, is that whatever are those areas of attachment and sense gratification that are important to you, let's say like nice food or nice clothes or a nice house or nice, fine. But see that it's all connected to Krishna.
Even subtle desire for sex.
But then the point is the subtle desire, but the subtleness is romance.
Yeah.
But romance, then according to Shastra, then has a method. So following that method of Shastra, you can purify it. Does that make sense?
How?
This is a, how you say, monstrous discussion. We'll try to say it in a very succinct thing, because it's something that we haven't really dealt with here. It's the male-female principle. The female, we alluded to it, the female principle is, you only get response from the female principle when it's dealt with according to its nature. In other words, what is the mood or nature that the feminine, the female is in at this moment? You deal with that, then things go smoothly. Right? You make a plan that I'm going to do this when I get home, and that plan will not happen. You'll be frustrated, she'll be frustrated, it'll be a big fight. But if when you walk in the door, then you just deal with what is the mood the woman's in at this moment, you'll be successful. So then, by that method, then you see that it's actually the interaction, it's the emotional platform that's important. Right? And from that, then you'll start to see that, because for women, sex is not important. It's not. It's emotion. It's romance. It's the intimacy based on relationship that's important to them. That's what's important. Sex is not very important to them. So therefore, any satisfaction dealing with women means you have to deal in their platform. Otherwise, if they're not happy, you won't be happy. Right? So then, all those things, you speak nicely to them, you do things nicely, but not for the point of sex, but because that's how they're supposed to be dealt with. That's dharma. Dharma is doing your duty because that's what it's supposed to be. You're the husband, she's the wife. She's the female, you're the male. The dharma, the male, is to behave in such a way that the feminine male is feminine nature is protected and cultivated. Right? So that means it's your duty to tell them they look nice, but not just you say it, you have to notice it. You have to be able to, if you say you look nice, you have to be able to answer when they say what looks nice, you have to be able to say. So that means you actually had to be focused. So you can tell them it's nice, the cooking was nice. But it's not that you said it once, when you were married, 40 years ago, and now it's... You have to say every time it's nice. And just saying, oh, that was very nice dinner. Then you would think some days it goes, oh, thank you. But then other days it goes, that was a very nice dinner. What did you like about it? Because you just said it. Or it's either you just said it so they're how you say, catching you on that. Or it's they like that you said it was nice and they just want to carry that on more. So they'll say, oh, what did you like about it? Oh, I liked the way the subject was like this. And then they may be satisfied, but they may say, well, what did you like about the subject? Or I like the sauce or the spicing in it, or the whatever it is, you have to be able to say. And if you can't say, fight. So that's the point, is this is Shastra. This Shastra says this is how you have to deal. And you see, then it worked. Then the actual Grihastha ashram becomes like the Brahmachari ashram. You are forced to be humble. You are forced to be tolerant. You have to respect your wife. And you have to expect nothing in return for everything that you've done for them. And if you can do that, you will be the successful Grihastha. Your wife will be happy, and you will have great realization, and your need for the Grihastha ashram, step by step, will evaporate.
I'm realizing this after 70 years.
Yes, yeah. Point is it works. It's in the association of devotees, and you get this. Some people never realize that, and then they, like that. So you have to be independent, because if you expect, I did this for them, now they should do this for me, you're dependent upon them. But man means independent, so women don't like that. Man does something, doesn't expect anything in return, when they're sure that that's the way it is, then they reciprocate. It's just their nature. Because they're dependent, man's not. So if the man's dependent, then that makes them in the male position, so how can they be females? So they're not satisfied. Then if a female is satisfied, you'll see, then she's very nicely engaged in religious activities. Then she likes to go to the temple, she likes to chant, she likes the devotees to come to her house, she likes to cook for devotees. But if she's not satisfied, she doesn't want to do any of that. So then the Grihasthas say, well, it's Maya doing all those things. No, but by doing those things, then the women actually take an interest in Krishna consciousness. Because they look at things religiously, not spiritually. Prabhupada says, you see, any time he talks about husband and wife, spiritual husband, religious wife. He never says spiritual wife. She may be spiritual, but her feminine nature is going to be functioning in that environment because of the religion. Then her as an individual soul may have the commitment spiritually, but it's not necessarily. And it doesn't matter, even if she's just a good religious wife, and the husband is spiritual, if he goes back to Godhead, she'll go back to Godhead. So it doesn't even matter if she never gets to the spiritual platform. as long as she was religious. So therefore, even though it's Maya, that's the Maya you gotta, you know, it's Maya going to the toilet. Right? But it's a Maya that you have to do. So therefore, we follow Shastra. How we use the toilet, we clean with water, not with paper, things like that. Then it becomes, we become purified. So the practical, the process is practical down to the finest point. But just devotees either don't know or don't want to know. Is that okay? Okay, we should end here if you want to make it for your... Srila Prabhupada ki, Sanya Vita Bhakti Vrinda ki, Sanya Tagore ki. So you don't have to worry. All those things that you know that are supposed to be done, do those properly, because that's what Krishna wants you to do. And by doing those, and gradually you'll see that there's nothing in it. The nice thing about the nice cooking is that it's been offered to Krishna. You know? Because you can go to a restaurant, they cook very nicely, but there's no taste. One time you go, this is nice. The second time you go, not so nice. Third time, no interest. Same food. But the wife can cook the same thing every day, and it's nice because you offer it to the deity. So that's not actually the problem. The problem is the attachment is not connected to Krishna. That's the problem. The problem is not attachment. The problem is the attachment is not connected to Krishna. That's because the spiritual world, they only work on attachment. They don't work on knowledge. The gopi says not that by knowledge, then, you know, it's just attachment. Mother showed it's attachment. Cowboy says attachment. Even the cows, it's attachment. So attachment, material attachment is the problem. But attachment's not the problem. We generally tell you, attachment is the problem, throw anything else to deal with attachment. Therefore, we throw out the tools by which we can free ourselves from the material world. Because everybody's attached to something. Right? If you're conditioned. I mean, every soul is, but of course, but in the condition, you're attached to something. So what that is, that doesn't matter. But connect that attachment to Krishna, and it's the thorn with the thorn. So we're saying thorns are bad, so I won't touch a thorn, but the thorn that's in my skin doesn't get taken out either. So you want to take out this thorn, you got to take the other thorn and take it out. Right?
I was reading Krishna in the later years, he became detached from the family, which is in the 11th canto of Bhagavatam.
Krishna?
Yeah.
Krishna was always detached from the family. The point is Krishna reciprocates with the devotees. But it's like this. How easy would it be to give up that attachment because he's got the Brajabasis? Brajabasis is 100% commitment. Wives are 50%. We're talking pious. So Krishna never at any time is that he's doing that because that's the thing to do. And then his example, then he'll manifest his... He's never been entangled in that from day one. He just looks like he is. He acts as an intelligent man, even though he's not henpecked, acts as one. Because if the woman thinks she's in control, she's secure. And if a woman's secure, she's peaceful.
She has trouble in that.
A man becomes angry because of frustration of an endeavor. Woman becomes angry when there's insecurity. Never the frustration of desire. They'll keep going. But if at any point that endeavor that makes them think that my relationship is compromised, that moment they become angry. Right? It's that. They don't get frustrated that the endeavor didn't work. It may sound like it, but it's something else. They're insecure. Oh, it didn't work. Oh, my subject didn't come out nice. But then people will say she doesn't know how to cook. So it's social security. So that's what's going on. Right? You know what I'm saying? These are the things. Women freak out of security because they're dependent. Right? They are sense gratification. So, you know, they are results. Right? So therefore, you know. Does that make sense? So it's a different mood. it's a different mood. But for the women, they are dependent. So for them, security is everything. So that's why when there's an argument, they're angry. They're trying to establish the security. And that's why you have to be humble, because then they are convinced that the relationship is there. If you just say, you know, I'm sorry, I said I'm sorry, but then where's the relationship? You have to really mean it, and mean it for as long as they hurt. You know what I mean? If they had this much pain, then you have to be humble that much. then they'll say, okay. But if it's only this much, then it's not. Or if it's more, you know, that they hurt this much and you keep going this much, yeah, it's enough. Don't do that. You know, stop being stupid.
Well, 99% of people are Kali Yuga, 99.99, they are married people. And when we are preaching, it means this point which you have just now mentioned, very important to know. If we don't know these things, how we are going to preach to these people who are married people? Because once we understand there's a psychology, sometimes we cannot talk to a man because the women, these are very dominating people there. So first we have to handle, I've seen in America, you know, when they were going for the book distribution or giving some citation, you know, the couple is standing there. I know Rishikesh, he will say, I want to give you ticket, and you know, finally, oh, you are very beautiful. Means he will first convince the wife, otherwise she will never allow husband to pay money in this society, this psychology is very, very important to know all these things.
And the same thing, it applies, there's nothing that you deal with that it doesn't apply to. But it's the most developed and complex in the Grihastha Ashram. That's why it's studied there. But the same thing is here. You want to deal with the microphone, means I don't pick it up like this, right? Or I don't keep it over here, because it's against the nature of the microphone. I have to pick up the microphone how it wants to be picked up, and at the distance according to it, not according to me. So that's the thing. Man means he's able to function according to someone else. Woman means they can only function according to themselves. So this idea, I'm the man, what I say, that's the way it's got to be, that's feminine, that's not masculine. Masculine is the women are like this, and then depending upon that, I'm going to get them to do what I want, but through their mood and their nature. That's a man. But the one who just says, you know, how you say, according to scripture, the woman follows the man, but then if the man's not going anywhere, how will she follow? He comes home, he sits down on the couch, reads the paper. Is anything happening? Nothing. How does she follow that? So does she follow that? Then by following that, she should sit down in the kitchen and just talk prajalpa to her friend on the phone. But the man's thinking, she's cooking dinner. So he's doing nothing, she's supposed to do something. So how is she following him? Good passion is better than the mode of ignorance. You know what I'm saying? Because he interacts with her, therefore then she's inspired. Whatever it is, sometimes it means direct interaction, sometimes it just means providing the facility. But whatever it is, unless it's done, it won't work. The same thing is, it works in anything. The brahmacharis aren't going to function nicely unless the leaders of the brahmacharis create the environment that works for them. You know, what a brahmachari needs. Otherwise, he's not going to get the response of brahmacharis doing work all day. Right? Service all day. They won't do it unless the environment that a brahmachari needs is created. Because then they're the leading and they're the following. So the principle of, you know, how you say, shakti shakti man, that applies to everything. Right? So if it's understood, you can apply it in anything. But the one place generally no one ever applies it is in the Grihastha Ashram, because there's this mystical thing that once one gets married, just having gotten married, one thinks one's qualified and is the best Grihastha in the world. Yeah. One has a child, one thinks one's the best parent in the world. Everything else you have to be trained for, but somehow or other these, which are the most important and most complex, you need no training. It's just, you know. So the biggest obstacle actually in this whole thing is, one is, first you can catch the women, that'll be actually the easier part, because then the whole thing will run and you can work. Because you don't get brahmacharis unless their mothers agree, right? Like that. And, you know, husbands don't come to the temple unless their wives agree. So, but the women are, in one sense, and I mean, in one sense, it's where the focus is, because that's, because if you have a mixed culture, it's only mixed because there are women, right? If there's only men, you don't need anything fancy, right? But when you add women, then the whole culture manifests. So if you have a culture, that means because there's women, so therefore they have to be central in it. They don't run it, but they're the center of consideration, but they're not the center of who operates it. The men operate it, but the consideration is the women. Right? So then, but then, what was the other point? But the most difficult in training grihasthas is the man's ego. Is this element of laziness that I've done this, it's good, that's enough. You don't have to tell me anymore, I understand it, fine. And so they won't, even though if they're having trouble in the marriage, you can tell them, but as soon as it starts that they do it a few times and there's less trouble, they don't want to hear anymore. They figure they become expert. But the point is how the woman will manifest that particular formula is unlimited. That's why the women. Man will be steady. Every day he walks down the same street at the same time, goes to the same coffee shop, orders the same coffee, the same donut, and he's been doing it for 20 years. But a woman, even something she says, this is ecstasy, this is the best thing, she won't eat it more than 5 days in a row. Maximum. Generally 3 days, and that's it. Right? And then she won't look at it for 6 months. Right? You know, so variety is there. So even you figured out in one situation, two situations, if you didn't catch the principle of it, you'll still make the same mistake. But if you caught the principle, then you're applying it in every way it manifests, because a woman will never respond twice in the same situation, in the same way. Never. It's always some difference. Even if it's subtle, generally it's less subtle, but even if it's always different. So, unless the principle is understood, then training has to go on until it's understood. But much of the time, the men, they all think they're doing great. They're doing fine. If they're not having a fight, then the man thinks, I'm doing fine. But is the woman happy? That's a completely different story. It's okay. It works.
Yeah.
Right? That. He brings home the money. It's secure. It's okay. But it's not that she, as a female, is satisfied. She doesn't feel the interaction, the support that is there emotionally. But life goes on. Food is there, clothes is there, social standing is there. And, you know, all those basics are there. Okay, it's okay. But you'll find that most families, that's all that is. At best, I'm talking about the good ones. But the woman actually being happy, where she's dynamic, very few. Because unless the man knows how to apply these principles all the time, it can't happen. It can't. It's not that it may or may not. It can't. You know, unless the machine is plugged into the current always, it won't always work. Man thinks he plugged it in once, turned it on, then, you know, now he doesn't have to plug it in. It should run forever. You know? Like that. You know, that one day he went out of the way and told her how great it was. Then he figures that he never has to say it again. No, you have to say it every time. You know, if they're in the mood. If they're not in the mood to hear it, then you go to say it and say, I don't want to hear about it. You don't say. Don't get, what do you mean? But you said you wanted it. You know, it's like, you know, that's all. You know, in the morning you talk, hey, yeah, you know, we've been in the house all day. Why don't we go out tonight? You know, and then you think the whole day I'll go out and do this and that, and we'll get home at this time and we'll get in there and then she'll be ready here and I'll drive down this road and miss the traffic and all these different things and we'll get there. Then you get home and then she says, oh, hi, dear, okay, are you ready to go? No, I was thinking about it. You know, wouldn't it be nice to stay home? We never stay at home. What do you mean? You just said we never go out. You know, so if he takes that line, there'll be a fight. And if you just say, oh yeah, fine, yeah, what do you want to, you know, so what should we do? It'll be nice. It'll work. That's where the romance is. Like that. You know that the relationship is always fresh. If you don't know that, it'll get old and stale real fast. And it'll stay that way. But if you know this, it's always fresh. And if the women are happy, the man's happy. The man's happy, he also is more inspired to do more for Vishnu. because he doesn't have so many things in his mind, you know, wife this and that, and then the wife saw this, so therefore then there's trouble at the business, and then trouble in there, and then Bombay so this and that, and then the whole, you know, one's mood is gone. But one just has to be careful as one's following Shastra. That's why then when the wife's happy, you're happy, because then if everything's clear, I'm doing things according to Shastra, now I can just go to the temple and chant, and she's happy. Right? She's busy over in the corner talking to her friends, and I can just be here and chant and be with my friends. I don't have to worry that, oh, I didn't look at her, I didn't, you know, call her, you know, during halfway through the class, is she all right, and stuff like that. Is that okay?
Wonderful. Yeah. Fantastic. I wish I should have heard all this for 40 years.
Yes, but that can be trained. Like that. You know, you have a good bunch of devotees, you can train them. Okay, very good. Hare Krishna.